now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
Good news and bad news, girls. The good news is your dates are here.
What's the bad news?
They're dead.
Ah! See, a United States astro robot becomes a creature of death. Oh.
And Dave.
We have come here to this planet for one purpose only, to acquire breeding stuff to repopulate our planet.
He who breaks the law shall be punished. Back to the House of Pain.
Back to the House of Pain.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-movie podcast from Class to Cult and the Cheese in Between. The movies are babe, the entertainment is grade A, and I'm your host, Jason Giaconetti. It's just a solo effort this time out, and today I'm going to be looking at Pharaoh's Curse from 1957, and we'll get to it right after this.
Let ye who seek to disturb the eternal peace and sleep of the Royal One, beware.
Terrorizing the world with a mystic power centuries old. It feeds on blood. It kills for a cat goddess. The seductive embodiment of an avenging ancient evil. Pharaoh's Curse.
You, Faraday. You're a doctor?
You can fight known things, but I don't know how to fight the unknown.
I think it's a room. Throw me a torch.
Pharaoh's Curse was released in February of 1957 with a 66-minute running time. Your director is Lee Sholem. Lee Sholem went on to... his first one was Tarzan's Magic Fortune in 49, and his last movie was The Doomsday Machine in 1972. He had Torbor the Great as well in there, and then he had directed Superman and the Mole Men, and a few others, but nothing stands out. Some TV credits as well, including Captain Midnight, The Adventures of Long John Silver, and The Adventures of Superman. Your producer was Howard Koch. Your screenplay by Louis Landau. Your stars are Mark Dana, Ziva Rodan, Diane Brewster, George Neese, and Ben Wright. Music was by Les Baxter. Production company here was Schneck Knock Productions and Bel Air Productions. And your distributor was UA, United Artists. Don't have anything about running about budget here. But what I can tell you is the film was released, obviously, by UA. And it was put on a double feature with Voodoo Island, which played in 1957. All right, so let's get cracking here. In 1902... Cairo, in Cairo, Egypt, as a riot breaks out in the streets, Captain Storm is assigned with a small consignment consisting of himself, Gromley, and Smollett to retrieve the members of an unsanctioned archaeological expedition into the Valley of the Kings, who are seeking to find the lost tomb of Rahatep. Storm's mission is compounded by the fact that the expedition's leader, leader's wife, Sylvia Quentin, is now en route, and the group has to take her with them to her husband. So at this point, we have a riot breaking out. If you're expecting a mummy movie, I think you're going to be vastly disappointed, because it kind of starts out looking like a mummy movie, but we don't get a lot of mummy movie stuff in it beyond the fact that you're in Egypt. And there are trappings of a mummy movie, but just, you know, no real mummy, so to speak of. Anyway, so they encounter a strange woman named Samira, whose brother Numar is helping the Rahatab expedition. Though Storms turns down Samira's offer to lead them on a more direct route, he relents as Sylvia is stung by a scorpion. Okay, so this is one of the... They're all sleeping, and you see a scorpion coming, and it's, you know, they show her, they show the scorpion, they show her, they show the scorpion, and they show the scorpion going into what appears to be her bedroll, and it stings her. And the problem is now they go to grab the med kit, and the med kit's gone. And the same thing happened the day before when they have food and water, and Samira refuses to eat anything, but then all of a sudden one of their mules with their food and water is gone. Like, there's a lot of things that are happening, and you as a viewer kind of know, like, hey, look, I think they're being set up here. But clearly, you know, as you're going through this, it's just how the story has to progress so that our whole crew can get to where they're going. By the time the group arrives at the site, Samira announces that they are too late, as Robert Quentin and his group have opened the sarcophagus with Numar suddenly collapsing to the floor. Okay, so when Numar collapses to the floor, he's a young man. You know, they keep calling him a boy, but he's a young man. He probably, you know, maybe 18 or so, but like he's not like a child. And he's the local who's helping them. Well, he collapses to the floor, and they now bring him into their medical tent, and they're going to, you know, kind of keep under observation. Quentin is upset about learning that he has to return to Cairo, and that Sylvia has come only to end their relationship in person instead of doing it via letter. They return to the tomb with Storm following after him, and they find the mummy is missing, with cat footprints leading from the sarcophagus to a solid wall. Quentin storms off to confront Numar upon realizing something was off about the guides joining the expedition, only to lead Numar into a rapidly aging state with no pulse. So what happens here is, this is where you have your mummy, quote unquote, kind of look to this. The mummy itself is in there. It's just a normal looking mummy, nothing, no universal horrific looking mummy kind of thing. And now that the mummy's gone, and now Numar is aging rapidly. That's where your special effects come in here. He's gone from a young man to appearing to be much, much older, wrinkly skin. His hair is starting to gray. He's appearing to age very, very rapidly in a matter of hours. And he has little to no pulse. Or they can't find a pulse, I should say. Later the night, Numar enters the tomb complex as Gromley found out one of the animals was drained completely of blood. So this is another thing, too. So we have a situation here where you have one of the animals is drained of blood. And that's going to be a theme that's going to come up again, which kind of leads me to believe that they were trying to set themselves apart from the other mummy movies. Because in none of the other Universal mummy movies, was there ever a vampiric aspect to the mummy. The mummy might choke you and leave dust on you and stuff like that. Even... This is 57, so we're getting, you know, this is right in the you know, wheelhouse of Hammer movies. You know, even Hammer's mummy, he's not draining your blood. He's choking you to death and crushing you, but he's certainly not draining your blood. So I think what they were trying to do here was give you a little different aspect on the mummy lore by making him kind of vampiric in that he's draining the blood out of the animals and eventually his victims to allow him to have animation. So instead of Tana leaves, or instead of a sacred scroll, we now have, you know, basically, you know, a vampiric idea. Where am I here? So, Numar enters a tomb. Okay, okay. Storm confines an unhelpful Samara to her tent as the group chases after Numar. The group splitting up, and later finding Gromley after Numar drains him of his blood. During the Gromley autopsy, Andrews and Brecht had translated a stone tablet which details the sarcophagus belongs to Retahab, the high priest who executed Retahab high priest who executed ritualistic suicide to be bound by a 3,000-year-old curse to kill any intruders in the tomb after possessing another body. Storm leads another venture into the tomb before finding a dying Brecht emerging from the chamber of the Basset, where he was attacked by Numar. Storm attempts to grab Numar when he falls back into Rahatab's chamber and unintentionally rips his arm off. As Faraday deduces that Numar's body had decomposed to the point of gradual deterioration, Samara warns Storm that the survivors must leave or else be killed by Numar. Later, a fearful Sylvia runs into the tomb complex after seeing a cat-like shadow prior to Samira's entering her tent. Sylvia is found by Samat and is brought to Storm, convincing him and others to find Samara. But Quentin forces Andrews at gunpoint to find a way to open the pathway to Rahab's resting place, only to be let in by the decaying Numar and fell victim to a rigged cave-in. Okay, so I just want to say this. So this, I had very little knowledge about this movie ever. I'd never seen this movie. I mean, I've seen it now, and I obviously watched it for this. But when we were growing up, the only thing I knew about this movie was that there was a picture in one of, and I don't remember which one of the monster books that my dad had when we were younger that I now have here. I just don't remember which one it was in. And it had a picture of a mummy in his pajamas. And it was like an old man looking, trying to be like mummy. Well, that's from this movie. Numar is in his garb and it looks like he's wearing his pajamas. The problem is that it looks kind of silly when you kind of see it in a picture as a kid thinking like, why is this mummy in his pajamas? Is it supposed to be a comedy? And it's not. But it's just one of those things that always stuck with me. And when I eventually saw this movie, I realized, oh my God, that's the picture I remember from a kid. And that might be my best memory of this movie at all, because I'd never seen it when we were younger. And it's probably for good reason. The movie is not super thrilling or exciting. It's not exactly, a movie that I'm going to rewatch again. I watched it for, obviously, the podcast. But it's not exactly a movie that I would just pop on and just kind of like, let me just have a fun time. Kind of like when you watch old Universals, there are plenty of Universal horror movies. They pop on and they're just enjoyable. Even if I'm not watching, if I'm working on something, I can kind of listen to it and still enjoy it. This one, there's just not much. Anyway, let's finish up what happens here. After Storm and Bucamp confirm Quentin's death, we can't find Samara's amulet as the group proceeds to leave the tomb complex, but they find the lid of the high priest sarcophagus back in place, finding the mummy inside to be Numar. The group then realizes Numar was the reincarnation of the high priest, while deducing that Samara is the goddess Basset in human form. Everyone agrees to cover up what had occurred and never divulge the tomb's existence, including ripping up the memoirs and throwing them all over the ground, because why not? So, 1957, we're talking about, this is a black and white movie made very cheap. The problem is that the Hammer's mummy, which was, 1959, would do this, like do the mummy thing to me, probably the best mummy movie ever made, just as a straight mummy movie, putting aside like Stephen Sommers' mummy movies that later came, but those are more actioners. And they're good, but they're just more action-y movies. Whereas the straight mummy movie, I think that would be Hammer's 59 Mummy, which we covered here. Doing that, to me, I think doing that better than even anything they did, obviously better than Karloff's, which I've always said should be called The Egyptian. And then any of the four mummy sequels, which are fine. But those are barely held together. You know, they're like maybe not only 60 minutes long, and they show a lot of flashback stuff. Anyway, Pharaoh's Curse is definitely one that if you are trying to find something else to watch, you can skip it. It's not a classic in the sense that you're going to be like, wow, what great, you know, special effects or what great whatever. The twist on the story, making him drain their blood, I think what they're kind of going for there, too, is easier to say than draining their life force off of them, stealing their life from them, leaving them as husks themselves. We would later see this when Imhotep would do that, and he would drain out, not their blood, but he would drain all their powers out of them during the Stephen Sommers Mummy movies. But again, it is a movie that for a long time was not readily available, and now it is. In fact, you can probably watch it as of this recording. You can watch it on Amazon Prime. But to me, if you're going to sit down and watch a movie, unless you really have a hankering to see it, I think you could find better ways to spend an hour or 66 minutes, whatever this thing, yeah, runs at 66 minutes. I think you could find better ways to do that for yourself. But like I said, I want to make sure we, you know, bring light. And it's not always going to be, you know, 4-star classics that we're going to cover. I wanted to make sure I brought light to another movie here that I had sat down and watched because I remember seeing it and I didn't. And I thought like, oh, I'm going to rewatch this. And I did. And it's not that I, you know, had a horrible time. It's just kind of boring. It's kind of stilted and boring, which is the at times. And not a lot happens. The action is like short. The mummy is not like, you know, it's just, you're not, you know exactly what's going on. There's not like there's any mystery once you see Numar aging, who the mummy, quote unquote, is going to be in it. So, all right, folks. So that about wraps it up for this time. Like I said, just wanted to come out this one time, you know, by myself. Dad will be back. I'll have other guests, trying to get other guests lined up and stuff. But as you know, in the world of podcasting and in really real world life, it's always hard to kind of get people together to start recording and getting things done. But have you seen Pharaoh's Curse? Did you have any experience with this? Do you remember the idea that like, oh man, there's a mummy in pajamas? Whatever. I'd like to hear from you. Shoot me some feedback. We'll read it here on the show. All right, folks, that about does it for me here. Hopefully you are all doing well. Come back next time when we are, again, I'm not sure what's coming up next as I'm just recorded this here. But I'm sure there'll be something really cool coming down the pipe. So until next time, folks, keep those cards and letters coming and keep watching the skies.
This is Tokyo, once a city of 6 million people. What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination. Tokyo, a smoldering memorial to the unknown. An unknown which at this very moment still prevails and could at any time lash out with its terrible destruction anywhere else in the world.
Hi, folks. Luke Giaconetti here. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Do you like giant monsters, or as they're called in Japan, Daikaiju? Monsters like Godzilla, Rodan, Gamera, King Ghidorah, or Mothra? Do you like more obscure monsters, such as Gappa or Yangari? Do you like giant heroes like Ultraman or super robots like the Shogun Warriors? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then I think you might like my podcast, Earth Destruction Directive. I'm a dedicated fan of all things Daikaiju, and I'd like to share that with all of you. Please check out Earth Destruction Directive at 2TrueFreaks.com. Earth Destruction Directive, where we turn your Daikaiju dreams into city-smashing reality.
This has been an episode of Bots, Bugs, and Babes, the B-Movie Podcast. If you'd like to contact me, please email the show at BotsBugsBabes@gmail.com. If you'd like to find me online, I'm on Facebook under my name, Jason Giaconetti. I often contribute to the Two True Freaks Facebook group. You can visit my Facebook page, The Art of Horror Collective, and you can search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective. On Instagram,
find me under my name, Jason Giaconetti, and search the hashtag The Art of Horror Collective, as well as the new hashtag Bots Bugs Babes Podcast. I'm the only one using them. I'm also on Twitter at Jason Giaconetti, and you can visit my webpage at www.theartofhorrorcollective.wordpress.com. All movies, characters, stories, music, etc. are properties of their respective holders. This is a fan work, and any use of any property is purely for review, discussion, entertainment. So don't sue me. I ain't got anything anyway.
There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow! There is no tomorrow!
Will you stop?